Hey ladies, super excited to be in front of you today. As your bodies may be telling you, it's 3 o'clock in the afternoon, right? Maybe a little bit tired. Already we've had so many great lessons, but it might be a little bit different than what we've had already. I want you to talk to me. It's 3 o'clock, right? We're gonna wake up. My lesson is going to be, I hope, very interactive. So, Hannah, can I still just, is it okay if I just scroll through? Okay. We're going to be talking about how we can make the most of every opportunity. So, I'm at your feet as well. Kind of the way that I've approached this is a roundtable discussion. I'm going to be the facilitator. But I want your ideas. We each have our own unique experiences, personalities, things that we are good at that we can all bring to the table. Okay, so I've planted a few of you in the audience. If I haven't talked to you, this is your invitation. Please talk to me during the lesson, okay? Okay. So as we get started, one of the big resources besides the Bible that I took some inspiration from was from this book, written by David Kinnaman. It's called Unchristian: What a New Generation Really Thinks About Christianity and Why It Matters. It's a really interesting read. Got it from the library. You can order a copy, to read on your own as well. So I'm going to start with some quotes from this book from David Kinnaman. He is actually the president and a researcher for the Barna Group. The Barna Group is a research group that polls millions of Americans on a yearly basis, primarily about faith-based topics. And so in this particular book, he wrote, among young outsiders, 84% say that they personally know a Christian, yet just 15 thought the lifestyles of those Christ followers were significantly different from the norm. So the majority of the outside is viewing Christianity as hypocritical, saying one thing, yet doing another. And I'll tell you, ladies, this book, some of the things that David Kinnaman has written, he's written other books, other papers, somewhat eye-opening. In another Barna poll, unfortunately, there are some statistics to back this idea up. There was a poll from based off of the lifestyles, activities of Bible believers versus non-Christians. And whenever they were asked about the activities over the last 30 days, Bible believers were just as likely to gamble, to visit a pornographic website, to take something that did not belong to them, to consult a medium or a psychic, to physically fight or abuse someone, to have consumed enough alcohol to be considered legally drunk, to have used an illegal, non-prescription drug, to have said something to someone that was not true, to have gotten back at someone for something he or she did, and to have said mean things behind another person's back. This is supposed to be the face of Christianity. What are your thoughts? Tell me your thoughts.
All that is true.
It's sad, right? It's sad. Yes, unfortunately, you know, the people who were answering these were, I guess, in a good way, being honest with themselves, right? So my critical analysis of this poll, I have three things, like that was just said. This is staggering. For Christians, people who say they are Christ followers, in the last 30 days, they have admitted to at least one of these things. My other takeaway is that these statistics, they do represent all of Christendom, right? We're not just talking about members of the Lord's Church. But along with that, unfortunately, the world doesn't always see the true face of Christianity. And so we, as members of the church who seek to imitate Christ in all that we do, we have this seemingly uphill battle whenever we're faced with these kinds of actions from outsiders, their perceptions of us. So we really need to strive to make the most of every opportunity to show the world who Christ really is. So whenever I'm thinking about our sphere of influence, in my mind, I visualize us at the center and these concentric circles radiating outward. So our first group that we would encounter, that would be like our close friends, our family. The next group I called our community, close community, and then the last group is our wider community. So as I was continuing with this research, one thing that really struck me is that as we are seeking to reach others, so often it comes back to us and to our character. And so my lesson kind of began to take on a little bit of a different tone. If we're going to impact those that we come in contact with, it's obviously not enough just to say, I'm a Christian. We need to live it out every single day. The Bible verse that we are so familiar with, let's see if I can, here we go. Matthew 5, 14 to 16, you are the light of the world. A city that is set on a hill cannot be hidden, nor do they light a lamp and put it under a basket, but on a lampstand. And it gives light to all who are in the house. Let your light so shine before men that they may see your good works and glorify your Father who is in heaven. Would somebody read 2 Corinthians 3, verse 18? Okay, so we are reflecting God's light. We are ambassadors representing Christ and Christianity. So I want to look at a figure for the first part of our lesson who really made the most of every opportunity that came his way. Daniel was part of the Israelite nation. Talk about ambiguity between actions and their beliefs. Daniel's contemporary, Jeremiah, says, were they ashamed when they committed abomination? No, they were not at all ashamed. They did not know how to blush. From idol worship to disregard for human life to sexual immorality and everything in between, the Israelite nation as a whole was not perceived as anything but the norm of the world. I can just imagine the survey, title, right? Among Gentiles, 84% say they personally know an Israelite, yet just 15% thought the lifestyles of those God followers were significantly different from the norm. And this is why, in about 605 BC, Daniel and his companions were part of the Israelites that were taken into captivity by the Babylonian king Nebuchadnezzar. But his story, more than likely, begins before that. From what we know, his parents were probably under the reign of King Josiah, and they heard the reading of the law. Would someone read from the Old Testament, 2 Kings chapter 23, verse number 3. 2 Kings 23, verse 3. And again, whenever we're reading this, keep in mind Daniel's parents and how this applied to their lives.
Didn't he stay by a pillar and made a covenant before the Lord to follow the Lord and to keep his commandments and his testimonies and his statutes with all his heart and all his soul, to perform the words of his covenant that were written in this book, and all the people took a stand for the covenant?
Daniel's parents were in this audience. They took a stand, as was read, to join in on this covenant. Before Daniel was taken captive, his mind and his heart was shaped to purpose, for the purpose of following God. Daniel was raised from the beginning to understand that if you break away from God's law in small ways, eventually, that's going to lead to a completely separation from God's law. So again, I know that this is about evangelism in our community, but it starts with us, parents, adults. It is so vitally important to know how your opportunities to teach God's word, big and small, affect our children. They're watching us. Are we preparing them to be part of the world like Daniel's parents did for him? So let's look at Daniel. In just the first few verses of the chapter, we learn a lot about Daniel. This reads, he was gifted in all wisdom, possessing knowledge, and was quick to understand. This allowed him many opportunities to influence others. Daniel's circumstances were far from ideal or made it easy for him to practice his faith. But he made the most of every opportunity that he had to be a strong character and to influence those who were around him. So go with me for a little bit of an imaginary trip. Daniel, here is a young man. Teenager, early 20s, he has been placed in the middle of this pagan nation without his parents. He was now Babylonian. He would be taught the Chaldean language. He would be taught their culture, how to behave like a Babylonian. Forget your upbringing. You were called Daniel. You were called Daniel. God is my judge, but no more. Now your name is Belteshazzar. Baal will protect. So Daniel, he had character and conviction. Again, a lot of this was instilled in him from a very, very young age. So I've heard the definition of character of which Daniel had. Character is holding to the convictions and not justifying things when they become convenient for us. So think about that as we, again, glean more from Daniel. So we also read very, very early on that he purposed in his heart that he would not defile himself with the portion of the king's delicacies, nor with the wine he drank. This one action, thinking about our sphere of influence, how did this perpetuate in his sphere of influence? So think about it. Remember, we had our close inner circle, our friends, our family. We had our community, and then we had our wider community. How can you think of some ways, just this one somewhat seemingly small instance, right? How did this perpetuate for Daniel?
Go ahead.
Yes, absolutely. Yes, he already made a distinguishing, draw the line, right? I'm not going to defile myself with these things.
He was able to influence his friends directly to join him on this because they already trusted him. And then he was able to directly influence the men who were in charge of the units. So that was the outer presence for him. And ultimately, it put him in the way of the king.
Yes.
Which would have been his all from making this decision.
Yes, absolutely.
And having friends to support him.
Absolutely. Yes. Yes. Very good. Yeah, go ahead, Lane.
You have to speak up.
Absolutely. Yeah, yeah. I mean, he couldn't just stay silent with it, right? I mean, one way or another, he had to make his reasonings known. Kathy?
There were two different effects, I think, of his behavior. One, it did set him apart, but then we're supposed to set apart. If we were truly following God, we would be sanctified, and we'd be set apart. But while it impressed the keeper of the eunuchs and the king eventually, it also impressed those who were ranked with him, and they became jealous of him and plotted against him. Because
absolutely. Yes, absolutely. Yes. And yeah, go ahead.
I think while it did separate him from the world, I think it also drew him closer to the people who were also trying to follow him. So
yes. I love that. Absolutely. Yeah. And we can see that in our lives too, right? Whenever we have drawn a line where God has told us to draw a line and we have others that are on that same side as us, we can rally together to support one another. So definitely, Daniel, through this act, was able to influence his close friends, his closer community, and then the wider community. Absolutely. Okay, so Daniel, this is just one instance, right? One instance of Daniel's opportunity taking to influence others for good. So let's look a little bit more at his character. Daniel was circumspect. He evaluated the instances that were around him. Through what we just read about, like Elaine said, he talked, right? He didn't go on a hunger strike. He didn't throw a tantrum. He knew people were watching, and he knew that his behavior was going to influence others and perpetuate down through his sphere of influence. He was fully aware that people were watching him and that he was reflecting the light of God. Daniel was also thoughtful with his words. Throughout the book of Daniel, we read of many instances where Daniel was able to deliver both good news and bad news in a way that was both truthful and diplomatic. In Daniel 2, we read about Nebuchadnezzar's troubling dream, right? One that he wanted answers for. So he called together his magicians, his astrologers, his soothsayers. They were willing to interpret the dream so long as Nebuchadnezzar would tell them the dream. Well, that wasn't what the king wanted. So would someone read Daniel 2, verse number 5?
Daniel 2, 5. The king answered and said to the Chaldeans, "My decision is firm. If you do not make known the dream to me and its interpretation, you shall be cut to pieces and your houses shall be made ash heap."
He was serious. He wanted answers, and he was beginning to realize that he may not be able to have what he was looking for. So the Chaldeans answered the king and said, this is from verse 10, "There is not a man on earth who can meet the king's demands. For no great and powerful king has asked such a thing of any magician or enchanter or Chaldean." Well, this did not make the king very happy, and he commanded that all the wise men, including Daniel and his friends, should be slain. Well, Daniel requested an audience with the king, and it's in 2:14 that we read, "With counsel and wisdom, Daniel answered Arioch, the captain of the king's guard, who had gone out to kill the wise men of Babylon." This word here, wisdom, comes from a Hebrew word that means to taste. So whenever I read this, can you imagine Daniel's thinking about what he's going to say, but before the words come out, he tastes them. He measures them. He wants to know how they're going to be played out on the king and those around. He tasted his words before he spoke. Our speech is one of the biggest ways, like Elaine was just saying, that we can and will influence others. Can someone read Colossians 4, 5, and 6? Colossians 4, 5, and 6.
Walking wisdom towards outsiders, making the best use of the time, let your speech always be gracious, speaking with all, so that you may know how you ought to behave.
Thank you. So whenever I read this verse, you know, definitely we need to make sure that our words, that we taste our words before we speak them, but also seasoned, right? Our tone, the way that we say those words is such a big thing. Okay, and then lastly, Daniel was consistent. The book of Daniel spans the entire lifetime, a good portion, I'll say, of Daniel, about 70-year time frame. And throughout the book, we see that Daniel is consistent in his actions, his words, and his prayer life. We know this example so well, right? Whenever the satraps tricked the king into signing a decree that made praying to anyone or anything for 30 days, other than the king, illegal. And not just illegal, but punishable by death through the lion's den. So knowing that the petition was signed, what did Daniel do? Yeah, he prayed. He went home, gave thanks to God like he had always done. So sometimes our moments, they might be brief, but whenever people see our godly and consistent character, those moments are meaningful. So as we go about our day-to-day living, we need to consider the long-term effects of our actions, not only in my life, but in the actions of those that who around me who are watching and listening. Did Daniel know that he was going to be thrown into the lion's den for saying a prayer to God? Yes. Yes, he did. Could he have just taken a 30-day break from God? Yeah, absolutely. How would that have affected those around him, that sphere of influence? What are your thoughts?
I mean, he would have lost all influence.
Absolutely. Yes, absolutely. Yeah, he could have decided, again, you know, just breaking the law. Oh, just it's okay. This is going to, God's going to understand, right? But the whole big perspective of this, Daniel always kept it in mind. So do we, like Daniel, work to make the most of every opportunity? How do you interact with your teachers at school? How does your tone come across to your coworkers? The one that we all love, what about social media? Do you portray a consistent, thoughtful Christian character in every aspect of your life? Okay, so now that we have centered ourselves, right, thinking back to our sphere of influence, let's talk about some practical applications. So I'm going to start with the bigger, and then we're going to work our way in. In some ways, I feel like the larger sphere is one that's a little bit easier for us, right? There's direct ways that we can come in contact with our wider community, inviting people to VBS, right, or to potlucks, things like that. Maybe they're not people that you know on a day-to-day basis, but you have some interaction with them. My husband, Branyan, works for Worldview Bible School, and they have this amazing opportunity to reach the world at large, right? The stories that Branyan brings home or that I get to go into the lunchroom to hear about, they're so heartwarming and amazing. A few that have stuck out in my mind, one is of brethren in South Korea getting balloons with Bible material and toiletries and things like that, and floating them across the border to North Korea. I mean, that's a really cool thing, right? You don't actually have to cross the border, but you can still spread the gospel that way. So that's a great, I think, just an amazing, ingenious way to do it. There was another instance of a dentist, a Christian dentist, who kept a stack of DVDs in his office. One of them was Where Do We Go When We Die? This is a very, very popular one at Worldview Bible School. But one of the dentist clients said, maybe that's not the best one to have in your office, right? I mean, how many people like to go to the dentist and then you see, Where Do We Go When We Die? So just saying, if you know of a dentist, keep that in mind. There's other great ones that you can put out there too. So what are some of your thoughts? What are some experiences that you have had with your wider community, the world at large, we'll say? What are some ways that you can think of? No right or wrong answer. I mean, I just love to hear these stories. It's so fun to hear how the brotherhood has affected. Go ahead. Absolutely.
It's always cool to see the fact that, like, when you talk to them and you give genuine concern to them, they're people who have genuinely come through our congregation over the next minute because of the kindness and the love that you show them in that moment.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, that's amazing in a very good, direct way. Yeah. Yeah.
One thing that I struggled with is that I first went to college, and with professors, they just the way that they present or how they direct their classroom. So one thing I struggled with is acknowledging that I would be the only Christian with my point of view. And it was really hard when you have everyone else's opinions that are against yours, and yours is only viewed as opinion.
Absolutely.
And how you have to present it is always, of course, calmly, no matter what they say. I mean, I've gotten things of, like, Bible thumper, but I was very thankful for our deacons, Brennan and Brett, who showed me the libraries, the DVDs, and everything that helps us get ready for those kind of debates, those kind of interactions, and how to present ourselves, and how to have not really so many answers to questions, but how to, like, redirect and ask them questions.
Yeah, absolutely.
Building that relationship so they can see us more, like, as an open than us being shut off, judgmental Christians,
yes,
who just believe one thing and we're in a cult and that's it.
Definitely. Yeah, absolutely. Love it. Yeah, go ahead, Kathy.
Well, one of the things that I try to make a habit of is that when I'm out in the public or at a restaurant somewhere and I see somebody in uniforms a lot, I thank them for their service. And whenever it's possible, if I have, say, one of those gift cards from WBBS or what have you, I'll just hand them one as I'm thanking them for what they do, because they have thankless jobs.
Absolutely.
And often appreciate it for
yes.
what they do, and even those who risk their lives every day.
Yes. Yes, most definitely. Yeah, exactly. So, you know, direct interaction like what we've been talking about. Go ahead. Oh, no. Okay. No, don't go ahead. direct interaction, indirect interaction. There's always opportunities to be had. Okay. So, like what we were just talking about, these next two groups, I'm going to say that developing relationships is paramount. When people know that we truly care, they're going to be more receptive to receive our message. Jesus was our prime example of this, right? He took the time to develop relationships. He came to seek and to save the lost. Jesus's enemies quoted him, or Jesus quoted his enemy saying, they say, look at him, a glutton and a drunkard, a friend of tax collectors. Well, Jesus was not a glutton He was not a drunkard, and he was not a friend of sinners in the sense that he was comfortable with their sin. However, Jesus took opportunities to show love and genuine interest in people in the world. What are some ways that you can think of? I mean, there's, you know, so many, but what are some that strike you? Jesus's ways that he was able to reach those lost souls. Some examples, some stories that you can think of. Go ahead. Right.
And would somehow be respectful while still.
Absolutely. Yes. Yeah. And so talking to, right? Not rather than talking at or talking down. Jesus was a master at that, and we should definitely seek to imitate that as well. Any other stories? I mean, like I said, our bucket could be full listening to the way that Christ presented it to others. Absolutely. Yeah. So whenever those walls can be broken down, right? I mean, there's that need that he sought to meet, and then they were receptive to his message oftentimes. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So being able to judge without being judgy, right? I mean, I know that that's a little bit of mincing words there, but it's a great opportunity for us to see how Jesus approached these people of the world who we were once a part of, right? Did you have, yeah.
Whenever we start talking about this, it always takes me back to Brother Andy Baker. The lesson, it was a long lesson for us, but it always takes me to Luke 4:18, where Jesus came, he came to save the last, the least, and the lost.
Absolutely.
And in 18, it says that he came to preach the gospel to the poor, so we have to look out. We have to be looking out for those poor. And he also came to heal the brokenhearted. So we need to look into people's eyes so that we can see who is brokenhearted.
Absolutely.
So we can reach out to. And just the blind.
Yeah.
The blind. They have no idea of what
right.
he has to offer.
Absolutely.
That's
just... Yeah. Yeah. It's very... Yeah. Go ahead, Charisse.
Kind of piggybacking on what the other you said and what you said, Jen. When you think about the lady at the well, from the way I understand it, you could tell what type of woman she was. And then, of course, the obvious, she's Samaritan, right? But then also, how many of us standing at the grocery store, we see somebody tatted up, and we won't make a comment because they're tatted. Or we shun somebody because they're a cross-dresser. Or whatever the outward appearance of somebody becomes, you don't look in their eyes and see. You've already said, you've given their ticket to somewhere where you'll probably go before they will.
Yeah.
I'm just speaking of me. I don't know mm-hmm. about you guys.
Yep.
And being able to not look at them. There's a song, Open the Eyes of My Heart.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I can see you, but to see the people as people. They're
absolutely.
God's children that are lost.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, go ahead.
Deserve it.
Go ahead, Carrie.
Earlier today in Brother Cam's lesson, he said that often he had thought when, in reference to having a Bible study with somebody, he would think, there's no way they'll obey the gospel. And he said, I pray every day, I never take that again. And I think that that, at least speaking for myself, has, I've looked at someone and thought, I would love to talk to you, but you're never going to listen. It doesn't keep me from being an example, but I think that that has put a wall between me trying to open that connection. You know, do you have a problem I have a solution to
right.
through God's word? Is there a connection I can make? But I don't try.
Absolutely.
Because I already have cracked inside of my mind. It's not going to happen.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, very good. And so many of these examples were... Go ahead. Absolutely. Absolutely. Okay, so you all have encompassed basically the rest of my lesson. So we'll go ahead and move on with that. So, yes, sometimes there are opportunities where people just walk into our building, right? They want a Bible study, and that is amazing. Oftentimes that does not happen. So how can we take these steps, these opportunities to seek and to save the lost like Jesus did? You know, sometimes we set ourselves up for failure, like what Kara was saying before we even begin. Maybe it's the fear of rejection, the fear of failure, the fear of verbal abuse. The Israelites felt the same way. We read that the 12 spies came back from surveying the land of Canaan, and they said, "We are not able to go up against this people, for they are stronger than we, and we are like grasshoppers in our own sight." And so we were in their sight. This type of thinking did not get them very far. So, like I said, you have all had great ideas. And the next three slides, we're going to talk about some of those. So if we want to make the most of every opportunity, first off, let's don't stereotype, right? Can someone read James 2, 1 to 4? James 2, 1 to 4.
My brethren, have not the faith of our Lord Jesus Christ, the Lord of glory, with respect of persons. For if there come unto your assembly a man with a gold ring in goodly apparel, and there come in also a poor man in vile raiment, and ye have respect to him that weareth the gay clothing, and say unto him, Sit thou here in a good place, and say to the poor, Stand thou there, or sit here under my footstool. Are ye not then partial in yourselves, and are become judges of evil thoughts?
Okay, this can be hard, right? As people, we see something. And then automatically, those preconceived thoughts, ideas can take over. An example, atheists are horrible people who don't want to know anything about religion. There are atheists, former atheists that I know, turn Christian, full, true Christians, right? Because somebody didn't stereotype. They realized that this person was a lost soul, and they needed the gospel just like everybody else. This person is somebody's father, their mother, their son or daughter, and it could be that they have a Christian family member who has been praying for them, and through God's providence, you have been put in their path. I know that I have family members who I have prayed for, and hope that someone wouldn't write them off as too young to care or too old to understand. Every person is a soul, and when we get to know them, they're going to get to know us as well. So don't stereotype. Next, remember that you have a message. This is not your opinion. You are a mouthpiece. You are telling others factual information. Sometimes removing the emotion from the situation, right? This is a message that we love and that we care about. But sometimes putting that aside and saying, this is a fact. You know, the universe is huge. The gospel is true, right? We can say these things factually. Whenever we can approach God's word with that mindset, we can be like the psalmist says in Psalms 1, but his delight is in the law of the Lord, and on his law he meditates day and night. He is like a tree planted by streams of water that yields its fruit in its season, and its leaf does not wither. In all that he does, he prospers. Okay, I know we are running out of time, so I'm going to go to keep your perspective. Remember, focus on why you're trying to spread the gospel. You have this utmost important message. And yes, sometimes it will fall on deaf ears. But you might be that beacon that leads somebody to the truth. You might talk to somebody and they don't want to hear anything about it. But later on down the road, that they could come across another Christian who has the same message. And it can finally begin to take root. I want to give you a perspective from an atheist, Penn Jillette, from the magic duo of Penn and Teller. Let's see. Okay. So he said, I've always said that I don't respect people who don't proselytize, meaning spread the gospel. I don't respect that at all. If you believe that there's a heaven and a hell, and people could be going to hell or not getting eternal life, and you think that it's not really worth time telling them this because it might make it socially awkward, atheists who think people shouldn't proselytize and who say, just leave me alone and keep a religion to yourself, how much do you have to hate somebody to not proselytize? How much do you have to hate somebody to believe everlasting life is possible? And not tell them that. Ah, that's hard, right? And then he finishes up by saying, I mean, if I believed beyond the shadow of a doubt that a truck was coming at you and you didn't believe that truck was bearing down on you, there is a certain point where I tackle you. And this gospel that we're spreading is much more important than that. Keep that in your perspective. Okay, so in this same book by David Kinnaman, so we're going to start looking at our closer circles, he also asked these young outsiders their impression of Christians. Only 23% firmly perceive that Christianity offers them hope for the future, and 1 in 7, only 15%, believes that Christianity is genuine and real. In addition, only 1/3 believe that Christians genuinely care about them. And we've mentioned this, you know, showing, talking to those in the world. I was surprised by this, and according to Kinnaman's results, others were too. 64% of Christians felt like their efforts were being viewed as genuine, right? We go out. This is our important message. So I'm going to read you this very brief story that Kinnaman tells of Stephen, a 34-year-old who moved to New York from Phoenix. Stephen told of a time when he met a peer in this unfamiliar city of New York. So Stephen said, a young guy approached me in a subway station once, friendly, full of questions, interested in talking. He seemed really nice, and I couldn't believe a New Yorker was being, well, so nice. We exchanged numbers and said that we'd hang out sometime. Next time I heard from him, he invited me to a Bible study, and that was all he wanted to talk about. When I said no thanks, I never heard from him again. Sometimes, rather than appearing as being genuinely concerned, we can come across as being, for lack of a better term, spiritual headhunters, right? We want to make sure that people know we genuinely care about them. So you know, finding ways, talking to them, like was mentioned, finding out their spiritual history, like Jesus did with the Samaritan woman at the well. He took time. He sat down with them. Again, okay, I'm wrapping it up. These opportunities are going to be so important for us, for people to know that we love and appreciate them and to bring them to the gospel. Okay, so then lastly, I'm going to say our close friends, they know that we care, right? Our close inner relationships. So there are so many brotherhood organizations that offer opportunities. One that I use is Carla Moore's Right on My Heart. It just goes through the Bible, right? You can't go wrong with the Bible. I print this off for my friend. We write it out every day. We take a picture. And things come up, and it gives us an opportunity to talk. Worldview Bible School has their whole yearly reading plan with hyperlinks that have these videos that you can watch together, you can communicate, you can talk to one another. And then also Worldview Bible School, yes, I love it. they have great videos that are relatively short. I mean, you know, 7 minutes or under. These connections videos, they are so incredible. Watch them and then distribute them to your friends. Give talking points to those relationships. Okay, so in conclusion, we may not all have the oration skills of Peter or the extensive missionary field that Paul did, but we can love souls like Christ did. Again, I'll leave you with, you are the light of the world. Let your light shine before men.